this time. Hey, folks, welcome to Redneck Country Podcast with Bill and Todd. Today, we're excited to talk about, well, we're not really that excited because we are going to talk about some humbling jazz. We figured we'd bring the human aspect into this and discuss possibly some of our failures at deer hunting and where we went wrong. Are you down with that, Bill?
Yeah, I mean, we've all had them, and it's definitely a humbling experience when things don't go right. But I tell you, like I say all the time, everything you can learn from is good, and we've got a lot to learn from in this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Always learning. And so we're hoping that somebody will pick up some, possibly pick up some don'ts from this one for sure. But before we get into that, my ego won't let me just tell a bunch of bad stories. So I want to tell the very first, the story of the very first buck that I had ever shot. And because it's kind of near and dear to my heart, and I've been dying to tell this, but it kind of leads into the very first buck I shot at.
Yeah, I don't think I've heard this story.
So no, and I love it. I love it. So the way that it went down was we're in our black powder week, which is our controlled hunt week, which if you listen to our previous couple podcasts, that's the week we're talking about. There's typically five guys that we hunt with. So we got five tags on a normal week. And we had shot four deer on the Monday and the Tuesday. So we had the one tag left. So we got up on the Wednesday morning, and already we had two guys saying, you know what? I'm asleep in. I'm not going to go in the morning. We've already got four deer down, which we were like,
tough
okay.
To get motivated. Yeah. Tough to get motivated sometimes when you've already got four deer on the ground.
Right? It really is. After you've got up that early, only a couple days though, but by the end of the week, you're feeling it. But they just were like, we're gonna sleep in. And okay, my dad and myself and my brother-in-law were still like, nah, we're going. And so we got up in the morning, and I actually got a call at like 4:30 in the morning as I'm getting ready from dad going, it is raining. It has rained all night. And you're still going? And I'm like, well, I don't know. Do you think? And my dad said, I think we need to go. We got a half-cut cornfield. Those deer have been out there, and we're going to shoot a big buck coming from the corn, heading back to the bedding area. We're going to put our tent right there in the middle of the field and wait for him to come out of that corn at first light.
Perfect.
And I'm like, you're so certain of that, are you, Dad? He's like, yeah, that's what we're going to do. Well, I guess I'm going to get ready and go out in this crappy, miserable weather. So out we go. Dad picks me up, and we go. And I didn't see my brother-in-law. He was already on his way out and in the adjacent field from us. So we get out there. So I said to Dad, all right, so I know where you want to go, and our tent is way down the other side of this big field. So you go to the spot where you want to go. I will go get the tent, and I will bring it over. And it was already set up. Well, he says, okay. So he goes walking and sludging through. I give him my gun, and away he goes. And so I go get this tent. By the time I get to Dad with this tent, I mean, my pant legs, it was a plowed field, the one side. We had the other side was half cut corn, and then they had already taken half of the field off. So by the time I get to him, there is mud clean up to my knees. Like my pants
Your
are
boots
just
must have weighed 10 pounds a piece, man.
And you know, that just sucks. Like it's just, I hate it. But anyway, so where we go, I get in there, I get the tent over there, and try to keep my patience with Dad and get all that done, get ready, get set up, sit down. It's hazy. It's still kind of misting out, but the rain is starting to stop, but it's still kind of misting. And here we are in one of these, and this isn't one of these new, like this was years ago, like I don't even 20 years ago.
20 years ago. Yeah, this is right around the time that you were first starting deer hunting.
Yeah, it was, I will tell you, it was 4 years in to me starting.
4 years into your hunt. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're sitting in this tent, and it's not one of these big hub style tents that you've got today. This thing's one of them. It's a, they called it, I think they might've called it a two man, but you can't, you, if no. You're bow hunting, you ain't getting two in. And me and Dad are like sardines in this thing. And it's with those, the like actual tent pole round things that they pull out. Yeah. And then you got to force them all back down and put in a pack. So
River's Edge or one of the River's Edge.
Yeah. And I don't even remember, but horrible. So I get it over, but it was a tent. It was out of the rain. So I get it over there. We get all situated, and we are in this thing like a sardine. We are tight and in the mud. And I mean, you want to talk about brushing in? Not at all. We are stuck like in the middle of this field. So, all right, here we go. We're sitting there. It's dark. It starts to get light. And I'll be darned if Dad goes, there, I told you. And here comes a doe out of that and comes trotting down. Well, not 20, 30 paces behind her. Here comes a buck right behind her. Comes out of the corn. I told you. Well, the way
the deer whisperer put you exactly where you needed to be.
I got to tell you, I was impressed. I was impressed. Yes, he did. And so I had actually shot a doe the day before. And so it was Dad's turn to shoot because we sit together. And So it was Dad. We used to always sit together, and not so much now because getting two of us in a tree stand is, it's not comfortable for anybody.
Yeah.
But back then Dad wouldn't sit in tree stands, and we didn't have tree stands nor the money to buy them. So we're sitting in this blind, and sure enough, this doe comes out and it's Dad's turn to shoot. So this buck, that doe starts heading to the edge of the woods, and this buck's hot on her tail, and the doe goes by us and still out there at 100 yards from us. And this buck's coming on the trot, and Dad's saying to me, stop it, stop it. Now, I watched a lot of monster buck videos back then. And so I'm back. It's not hearing us with the rain and the wind and everything else. Back, back, stop! And this buck ain't stopping. And so Dad, I said to Dad, you got to shoot it. It's going to be in the woods. So he puts his gun up and pulls the trigger, and that tent fills with smoke. I mean, fills with smoke. You know, I'm waving it, and it's swirling inside the tent so I could see. And it's just standing there staring at us. He missed it.
Clean miss.
So there it is. It's probably at 80 yards. The doe went by out at about 100, and it was out about 80. And it's just staring at us in the tent, trying to make out what we are. So I said to Dad, we shot the exact same gun, old Italia Hawkins, with the number 11 cap on him and a muzzle loader. And so I'm handing him, Dad, take my gun, shoot it. He says, no, you shoot it. Dad, it's your turn to shoot. Take my gun. You shoot it. Take my gun. He's, you shoot it. I said, Dad, it's your turn. Will you hurry up? He's going to take off. Dad looks at me with this, oh my gosh, his eyes are huge, like rage. Shoot the freaking deer. So from that, I was half scared out of my mind. I threw the gun up, put the gun on the buck, pulled the trigger, and then I see smoke again fills the tent.
Nothing but a cloud of smoke.
And I'm trying, and I physically have my head sticking out the side of the tent trying to see, and I see this deer trotting back to the corn, and I went,
oh no.
I missed it. And he goes, no, that was the doe. The buck's down. You got him.
So, that's awesome.
And then it was party time. So Dad's frantically reloading his, and this thing's down, and it keeps looking back at us. So I had hit it high and spined it. So Dad ran over, and then by the time Dad gets over to it, and he put one in the back of its head and finished it off,
it
didn't suffer.
Yeah.
And that was that. So all of that went down, and I realized I had not turned on my radio from my brother-in-law. And so finally get it on. Rick, we got him. I got a buck. It's a good one. And so he goes, you guys know we only got one tag, right? And so I said, yeah, we know. Well, what the heck? What was the three shots? So I had to explain to him, and he says, are you telling me? So he said it was at least 30 seconds between the first and second shot. So he says, you and your dad argued for 30 seconds or more.
I can't believe that deer stood and there and watched the show just, of you guys arguing back and forth.
Stood there staring at us as we're arguing back and forth over who was going to shoot it. He goes, it was easy 30 seconds, because I said, well, Dad shot and missed, so I shot it, and then Dad had to put the kill shot in. He goes, okay, well, that was the third shot. I get that, but why is so long between the first and second? I said, well, we were arguing. It was Dad's turn to shoot a deer.
Come to terms as to who was going to take the shot.
Yeah, so it was awesome. It was, what an experience to have and a story to be able to tell with my dad. So it was kind of cool. I've now got maybe I'll put a picture up when we post this podcast, but I got I got the rack on the wall, and it was a 10 pointer, and it busted off two tines at the end to make it. But I mean, they say they're countable, but the G3s are smoked off, but it would have looked insane with the G3s. As it is, it was still a nice buck, and it was old.
And what,
But
what'd you do? Do you do a European mount?
No, my all these fancy terms for mounts. It, to me, it's mounted or it's not. But it's my dad. On every, I have the what we call the wall of racks. So in my garage, it is. Maybe I'll put that picture up too. But it, in my garage, we've put all of the racks that we've shot over the years on the wall. So dad just goes and buys those. I'm not going to say cheap, but inexpensive velvet rack mounts that you can, and he then cuts the piece of the skull off with the antler and mounts it, and it's always his big thing to bring it over with a picture that he's gone to wherever and got printed off, and then he brings it, and we put it on the wall in the garage. So,
and that's in your garage?
Yeah, in my garage.
You got your own man cave trophy room right there.
You know what? I got a pretty understanding wife. Hopefully she's not listening and hears me. Darn it. She just yelled out. Don't know if you can hear her. I heard you say
it. I heard.
I have a pretty understanding wife. I got a lot of stuff around the house. I think I made a video one time on Redneck Country, but I got a lot mounted around the house, so I can't really say I have one man cave where everything is, but that wall in the garage is all just racks. I do have a buck mounted in my dining room, and then I got a turkey that me and my daughter shot mounted in the kitchen. So like I said, very understanding wife, because that turkey's a full body mount on top of
that's
the
fridge. Awesome.
It is pretty wicked. But and then I think I got about 13 turkey tails all around the house, and I try to mount the first thing I shoot, the first species of everything I shoot. I got wood ducks, I got some mallards, I got nice pheasants up and on the stairwell, and then I got some quail. I'm looking around right now to see what all I got. I got chucker. But yeah, I got it, and they're everywhere. It just I love them.
That's part of who we are, right?
Yeah, it's a memory, right? So I can tell you the story behind each one of these that's on the wall, which is that's the cool.
Yeah,
part,
and that's part of what it's all about. Like we were talking about earlier, they're making the memories, and I just actually finished putting all the pictures from this year's hunt in my memory book. I keep a journal. I try to record every hunt just in writing that I go on, so I can learn from it and sit by the fire.
We just discussed this, and I was going to make fun of you, but I was saving it till the podcast.
But, that's good.
But you do. You keep that's a good journal. That my dad has always, and I didn't know this. We just, because this is how this came up. I made my dad a leather journal cover for his journals, but he's always recorded, and not just hunts. He's recorded our vacations, and like every day he writes in a journal.
Awesome.
And so my kids brought home the stack of journals. But what are these? It's Grandpa's journals. And we're going to read them. And there's pictures in there, like my first bull ride or whatever it was, and stuff like that, like going through it. I was like, that is so cool. He's always kept it. But I always pictured it as an older person thing, Bill. I got Facebook. That's my journal.
I don't make long entries all the time, but I'd like to know. We talk about successes and failures, and maybe some of the times that you go out and you get busted, or you did something right, or your kid's first hunt. Sharing that experience in writing so that maybe later on when I'm old and the concussions have taken over, I can read it and maybe have an idea of what happened when I was younger. So,
cool. I should do it. Maybe I'll start when dad stops.
And then the pictures. I mean, I just put all the pictures in a photo album, and I can look back and for the same reasons about what worked and what didn't. And there's definitely some deer in there I can say, wow, I can't believe we actually got that deer after all that we that went into the hunt. But you know, that's kind of what we're talking about today, right?
Yeah.
Some of the things that worked.
So we led in with the failure side of things. I wanted to hit that story off, because what that story was the pinnacle, and why, and me and dad were freaking elated on that. Like we were pumped, and why we were so pumped is that was the biggest buck we'd ever taken out of that woods, that even my dad in all of the years he's hunted had ever taken out of that woods.
Up to that point.
Yeah. He's got a bigger one now. His mounted full mount on his wall, but so leading up to that point was a failure for Todd. I went 4 years and I'd never really bow hunted back then at that time. I didn't start bow hunting until after I shot that buck. And so the first 4 years, and my dad never bow hunted at that time either. He was always deer hunting was that week. That is what we knew was deer hunting was muzzleloader. And that was it. So that 1 week shut down, and that's what we did. So I went 4 years, my first 4 years of hunting, and never even got a deer in front of me to pull the trigger on.
And buck or doe.
Not a deer. And I mean, we are in a deer rich environment. And
yeah,
so
you guys got deer down there.
Oh, and more so now, but even back then, I mean, there was no excuse. We'd always get deer. We'd always get a tag out. But for whatever, and I was in Dad's spot, and Dad would sit with me, and maybe that's what it was. But Dad would sit with me. I'd sit in Dad's good spot that we knew where there was deer there. And I tell you, my brother-in-law would miss one, and I'd think, man, just put one in front of me.
All I need is a chance.
Yeah, he'd shoot a couple and miss one. That one, and he's already shot a couple. Instead of him missing that one, let it walk in front of me. Let me pull that trigger, because I ain't going to miss. And just didn't even get one in front of me. And I remember, I believe it was that same week, I was sitting in my, what I call the honey hole now, with Dad on the ground in ragweed, because we didn't have tree stands back then. And I'd gotten bored and cold, and I said to Dad, I'm just going to get up. I'm going to go look over the edge of this ravine on the edge of this woods. And Dad said, okay. So I got up, and I walked over 20 yards into the woods, looked down over the edge. I turned around, and all I could see was Dad up on his knees and the gun mounted. And I looked over, and here comes a 9-point buck walking right at him.
Nice.
Oh, my gosh. And he pulled the trigger, took it right down on the ground, on the spot. It walked within 30 yards to him, and he pulled the trigger, dropped it on the spot. And I was a bit of a spoiled little brat, jerk, arrogant turd going, I was mad that I got up, because that should have been 4 years. I get up, and that deer walks out. Oh, but good shooting, Dad, and I felt bad afterwards that I was that selfish and self-centered.
But I tell you what, though, that's the maturity of a hunter that's been in the woods long. Now, if that had to happen, you would have been 180 degrees different in your approach to it. You would have been elated from the second the trigger was pulled, as opposed to having to get yourself into the, yeah, that's good for you shooting that deer.
No, absolutely. Yeah, now I don't even care. I'm more pumped when the folks that are with us shoot deer, right?
Yeah,
once
for sure.
Shot enough deer, I mean, it's great to shoot them, but you're happy someone else got to shoot one too, and you get to be part of that. Absolutely. And especially my dad at 71.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that experience that you've come to know and get excited about, you just want somebody else to experience the same thing.
You got it.
Me, anyways. I would rather see somebody else any day of the week as a new hunter, as a person that has not had opportunity to shoot a big deer, knock something down, you know, help them out, enjoy the experience, and go back to camp at night saying, you know what, it wasn't me, but I'm just as happy for you as I would have ever been for anybody, you know?
Amen. Exactly. Yeah, I am 120%. That is true.
Yeah.
Nope, for sure.
Yeah, that's my mom. She shot her first buck last year, and that's all we wanted. You know, she wanted to go out. She wanted to see deer. And not only did she see deer, she shot a beauty 8-point for her first crossbow buck ever, which is a story I'll tell at another time. But and that goes to not wanting it for yourself. I only wanted her to go out there and see something. And it happened to be a success that hit the whole time too, right? So
no, that's awesome. Yeah,
that's where we're at.
No, I'm pumped to hear that story. That's wicked. I totally agree. I totally agree. I'm just as pumped. Dad got a big one a couple years ago. He got it, actually one that's worth mounting. He got it mounted. So I was so pumped after 60 years, 55 years of hunting. He finally was able to pull the trigger on a good size buck and get it mounted, which is, that's just awesome. It's just,
that's
was
crazy
so
to me, you know, that's crazy to me that some people go out there and the horseshoe's done. It's gotta be one and shoot a monster, whatever, 10, 12.
Their first year, point. Right? Yeah.
First year, you know, you hear the stories that I was only in the woods for an hour.
My brother-in-law did that. Yep. My wife's brother. Yep. Went out, sit in the stand with his dad. Big buck walks out and he says, no, that's not the one I'm waiting for on bow. You can shoot that one. Pulls a trigger after they walk over to it. Oh, crap. That was the one I was hunting. It's a monster. It's up on their wall. It's all downhill from there.
Yeah.
You might as well.
Another guy's like your dad. He waits 60 years before he gets the quote unquote wall hanger, right? Yep. He's filling the freezer every year and enjoying the hunt. But
yep. And some will argue, well, it's because you're filling the freezer, you're never going to get big bucks. But, you know, they come and go in and out of the areas too. And
sure.
You're not hunting like a locked up, huge, huge piece of land. But so you'll get bigger ones come through. But still, yeah, no, you're right. And that was awesome. But leading up to that buck, to go back to my failures, so that happened on the Monday, I believe. On the Tuesday, I finally went down on this ledge that Dad would always sit at too. It was either up on top or that ledge that I went and looked over when he shot that 9-point buck. There was, it dropped down to another ledge that overlooked a creek, and he'd go sit there. So on the next day, we went and sat there. And believe it or not, we had a tent, that same little pop tent thing that I was telling you about. And we're sitting in that little pop tent and overlooking the creek. And Dad said, I'm going to go for a walk. And I'll be darned if Dad doesn't get up and go for a walk and this big doe walks along that creek edge, and I thumped it. And so it turned around and took off, and I could see it flicking its tail, and then it slowed down after about 20 steps, and I could just barely see it before it disappeared really slow. Tried to get up kind of a little hill back down, and then went further. And I'm on the radio. What do I do? What do I do? I finally shot one. I finally shot one. What do I do? It didn't drop. What do I do? Dad says, sit still and quiet. I'm coming back to you. And then my other buddy that Mike Grieben Prey, he gets on the radio. You shoot it again. Well, yeah. Clearly, but I couldn't get reloaded in time. And so you get down after Dad gets back, let it sit for an hour. We get down and look, and sure enough, it had just gone 60, 70 yards and died in the creek. So that was my very first deer. So my first doe, the next day I got my first buck. And so that was awesome. But leading up to that first 4 years up to that, oh, was so painful. It was the one I want to tell, the failure story, the Saturday. Might have been the Friday. We weren't going to hunt Saturday, or couldn't hunt Saturday. But it was the last day we were hunting of the controlled hunt. So this is the third year I've not shot a deer. And everybody has. We got a tag left. So away we go. We decide that this time we're going to go mix it up and sit somewhere completely different. So I was walking with Dad's buddy, Bob, that the one that, if you listen to our previous podcast, he doesn't care if he shoots or not. He just likes being in nature. But man, when he does shoot, he can shoot. So I was walking with him, and there was the biggest scrape on the ground that I had ever seen. I mean, this thing was 7 feet by 8 feet underneath a big branch. And I said to Bob, I said, you know what, Bob, I've had enough. This is the last one. I'm going to roll in that scrape. You're going to what? I said, I'm gonna roll in that scrape. You just, here, hold my gun. And I got down on my back, and I rubbed my back down all in that scrape. And this is the first week of November, so it was fresh. And I was rolling it, and he was laughing. Like, you're crazy, Toddy. And I'm rolling around in this scrape and flip-flopping, looking like a fish out of water. I get up. He hands me back his gun. I said, now, I'm going to sit right over there. About, it was probably 200 yards from that scrape against the my back to that same creek, but facing the other way. And he says, okay, well, I'm going to keep walking. I'll go sit by your dad. I said, okay. So away they go. And I sat there, and 20 minutes before legal shooting time, I hear branches snap behind me, and I turn around and look. And sure enough, it was just dark enough I couldn't tell if it was a buck or a doe. But as it was walking, its head was down. Well, I cocked the hammer. I put it on the shoulder, what I figure. It's a 100-yard shot across the creek to the side of the ravine. I let her ring out, and you hear, and then it drops. I got it. Now, this is 3 years without seeing a deer, and finally one's there, and I just dropped it. And I figured it was a buck because of the time of night, the way it was walking, all the monster buck videos I had watched, and it stood there doing circles. And so he had to be close to me. He came running over, and because I remember him catching up. And previous to that, the day before or something, what got Bob the nickname Deadeye was Dad did a little mini drive by Bob and put three does past him, and he pulled the trigger on the first doe, shot it right in the neck at 140 yards running, and dropped it with his hawk and open sights, no scope. And that was it. I mean, it was a Hail Mary, but right through. I said, man, you're Deadeye. He's like, holy, did I get lucky? I said, no, that's Deadeye right there. You knew what you were doing. So it did the same thing when it got hit, and we could hear it through the woods. And so my brother-in-law, who was sitting a couple hundred yards away, he yells, and I could hear him, neck shot, and figured that was it. So Dad comes running over. This thing's spinning on the ground like it was breakdancing. And I'm reloading, and next thing I know, Dad says, it's getting up. There it goes. As I'm real, I look up, and it's going up the hill. It's hobbling up the hill, up the side, the ravine that we talked about tracking Scotty's buck. That's darn near straight up 100 yards. Holy crap. Give me your gun. So I grab Dad's gun, pull the trigger, have no idea what happened. So I did go back the next day without a gun, and I had blood just where it was doing the backspin, and that was it. I went up that side hill and its footprints, and I could not find blood, and I never found that deer. I looked for hours on that Saturday. I covered that hillside up and down every which way I could, and I never, ever, ever found blood.
But you dropped like a stone.
Dropped, and the stone was laying there for 3-4 minutes. Like maybe 5 minutes and spinning. And then got up and went up that side hill like it wasn't hit.
That's crazy.
And then never but found it.
The blood that you saw there, was it like just because it wasn't pooling, obviously, because it was spinning.
And it was so long ago, and like you said, concussions. But I don't remember that well. I know that I had some blood, and I know I had it going halfway up the hill, and it stopped, because I remember when I was tracking, I would leave my orange hat on a branch halfway up the hill, and I left it there overnight, and I never found that blood. After that spot, there was no more.
That's
blood.
Crazy.
And I looked everywhere.
You hope that deer made it. And it's just, it's kind of
well, weird. And I almost think it did. I'll tell you, the next year I did have a deer, and we were out of buck tags. And I was doing a little walk. And I used to get bored and go for a little mini walks, and it would turn lucrative. But I was doing a real quiet. I was doing a little quiet walk. I went up the side of this hill, and I had two does and this big buck jump up in front of me at 50 yards, and it had a limp, and it didn't run because I was walking quiet, but it kind of jogged away, and it had a good limp, and it was a good size buck. And I seen it again 2 years later in the bottom with a good limp, but it was too far.
I tell
to
you,
shoot.
I mean, that there's something to be said for the toughness of deer. And I'll tell you the story of my first buck that I had opportunity at, if we can dovetail into that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I used to hunt, when I was younger. I got into, the rifle hunt. I'm not sure if we talked about that in previous podcasts or not, but I was always the same way. I had a 1 week, opportunity to go with my dad. And, you know, when I was 17, I guess, when I first got my license, that was it. 1 week I'd hunt up Minden with a group of guys there, and tags were very, very sparse. We never actually got a deer while we were hunting. And when I first got my license,
nobody did in the park?
No. I mean, I think I only went up there for 3 years. We saw deer, from time to time, but doe tags were so sparsely distributed that there was no tags in our camp ever. So we'd have to see something with horns, and to see a deer was a miracle almost. I mean, I saw a moose, I saw a bear, but deer, no, I hardly ever saw anything. But so I needed to increase my opportunities for being in the bush. And so I decided I was going to take up bow hunting. And it wasn't until, you know, he had a couple seasons of not seeing any deer that you get the thought that you need to try something else. So we hooked up with a group of guys down in St. Catharines, where I used to live. And my dad and mom for Christmas 1 year got me a used compound bow. And, you know, by Christmas time, the season's pretty well done. So we didn't hunt the first year. But I practiced all summer. I practiced the spring, the summer, leading up to the fall. I got everything all tuned into the way it wasn't, I was going to be a deer hunter, a bow hunter. And the guys I used to hunt with, last name Boucher, Jerome Boucher, was kind of my mentor for the bow hunting side of things. And they had some great experiences underneath their belt. And they fixed me up with a piece of property in Jordan, which is close to St. Catharines. And there I sat, and did I see deer. I had doe tags for the area, and I was waiting for that big buck to show up. So one morning I got lucky, and October 31st, I won't forget.
See, sorry to interrupt you. I'm on the edge of my seat and it just hit the back of my head that, oh crap, we're talking about failure stories. I was getting excited, Bill, but I got to limit that.
Yeah. A little foreshadowing as to what's going to happen.
Yeah, I was getting excited. And I'm like, oh yeah, right on. Yeah. And I know your personality on tuning that bow in all summer. I know you would have that thing dialed in.
Yeah, I actually
harnessed that OCD.
Yeah, no, it was definitely harnessed. I was good. I mean, I was realistic with myself to know my limitations too, right? So, I mean, I'm not taking a shot over 40 yards of my first year hunting. At that point in time, the confidence level at 40 yards and less, I was dead shot, or so I thought, right? Until the big sucker walks underneath and the situation changes, but I'll get to that. So we had this block of bush, and I was seeing a bunch of does, and Jerome says, well, it's getting around rut time. Let's try some calling. And you know, me learning, a brand new hunter, relatively brand new hunter at that point, I started to do some research.
Deer.
Did you exactly? Yeah. What exactly? So I rattled.
So I don't learned. Do that.
Yeah. No. Come here, deer. No, that's not what you say. This isn't the right call to be using. But so just like you, I was watching monster buck videos, and TNN used to host the hunting shows on Sunday night, and I'd take my notebook out and I'd copy down how they were doing things, video record them, and go back and watch them. You know, I learned how to rattle. So I thought, I'm going to try this rattling thing. So first thing in the morning, and again, back then we're hunting with aluminum arrows. With Golden Eagle was the type of bow I had. It was, I don't know what it was, 65% let off, or it was an older used bow. So I'm up in this tree stand, this brisk Halloween morning, and I rattle, and all of a sudden, off my left comes this deer. And it was Buckzilla, to your comment. I'd never seen him before.
Right after you rattled? Like right on your rattle?
Right after.
Like not 5 minutes, 10 minutes? Like it was
there. No, it was there.
I've never had that happen. I've always wanted that to happen.
First time ever. And since. It has never happened since. So this deer comes, and there was a ravine it dropped down to a creek on the other side of the trail that I was hunting over, and this buck comes across the trail up the side of the hill, and he's 20 yards right in front of the stand. Now I could smell him. In my mind, I probably could smell him, but I could vividly see him walking across in front of my tree stand, quartering away 20 yards, and he's there. So I take the bow off the hold, the rest, attach my release to it, and the aluminum arrow across the rest. All the hairs stand right up on his back. And now I'm looking at him through the peep sight. Why grab my 20-yard pin.
Rest.
Yeah, exactly. What do I know at that age, right?
Yeah.
So, and I could hear, as soon as that arrow slid right across the rest, the hair stood up on his back, and now he's alerted to something else is around. And I picked that pin, and I put it right on what I thought was behind his front shoulder, and I let go, and all I heard was whack. Right into the front shoulder it goes. That arrow didn't penetrate the front shoulder, but now that deer goes.
Yeah.
Now the deer goes, and it's gone.
And did the arrow fall, or did it stay in his shoulder?
I'll finish the story. So I didn't find the arrow at all. I didn't find a broken piece, but I found some and a little bit of blood.
You found some what? Sorry, you cut out there.
A little bit of blood. And I could see him going across the cut soybean field, across the second cut soybean field that we had permission to hunt. And then he jetted off to the left into a block of bush. And my dad, we didn't have cell phones back then. So I got out of the tree stand, you know, went to town, found a payphone, got on the payphone, called my dad. He came to help me out, and we tracked. And it dropped probably less than a cup full of blood over the course of the 2 kilometers that we tracked him. And he was gone. So
never found
that him. Sucked. Fast forward 2 years later, we're at a big buck contest in Port Colborne, where they harvest, they go in the contest. You know, big buck contest. Yep, I'm sure you got them down there too. I see this guy, he wins second prize. I said, wow, that's a beautiful deer. He says, yeah, I'll tell you where I shot that deer, because he was a friend of a friend. Are you kidding me? That's the same property I used to hunt.
Oh.
He says, yeah, you know what I found on his shoulder?
No.
No kidding. He found the broadhead broken off in his shoulder when he field dressed that deer.
Well, he lived.
Yeah. Oh. He lived.
Did you say, you're welcome? Allow you to shoot that crippled deer. Probably would have been too fast for you if I didn't.
that was the pit of my stomach feeling. But you know what? The best part of that story is it lived. The best part of the story
was able to be harvested by somebody, and then you got to see that, which is a cool story. But you would have won second, Bill. You would not. I'm just trying to make you feel bad.
This is a failure podcast, Todd. This is all about our failures.
Oh, wow. Yeah, isn't it something that arrow won't penetrate? It blows my mind. I had the same thing. So last year, so 2 years ago, well, I guess you go 3 years ago since this season's almost over, but the year before last, I was up in the kind of our honey hole that we have, that we do everything. I mean, we shoot ducks, we shoot turkeys, we shoot geese, could shoot rabbits if we went in there for rabbits, but it's usually during deer season, and we shoot deer. And so I went in. It was my first archery buck that was good enough to mount. And so away we go. And it was actually the first time we hunted deer on this property. We hunted this property for turkeys and ducks and geese forever and never bothered to ask about deer. And farmer said, yeah, go ahead. So went in, and I was in Scotty's climber, and we flipped a coin that day at church. It was a Sunday afternoon, and we flipped a coin to see. We had no stands. So someone's getting the climber, someone's getting a tent. I won the flip, so I got the climber. I shot the big buck. He is on my wall. Next year, I go back in the same tree, go up that tree with the climber. I'm sitting there. Scott couldn't come that day. He had to help his uncle do something. So he was out of town. And I'm waiting. I see two does go, and then a buck's right behind him, probably 200 yards in front of me. So I throw down a little grunt call. He looks. I give him the snort wheeze. He turns and comes on a string right to me. I already ranged the tree that I figure he's going to walk out on. I know where it is. I'm hooked up. He comes behind that. I draw. He takes 3 steps. There he is. Put it on his just behind his front shoulder, 30-yard pin on him. Let the arrow fly. Well, what I didn't see was there was a birch tree and a little tiny branch coming out that I just didn't see. Staring at the deer, buck fever, whatever, didn't see it. Well, as that arrow goes through the air between me and him, it hits this branch probably 5-6 yards before him. That sound made him careen side, like shifted his whole body and leaned over sideways. That arrow flipped up off that and pierced his back, his skin, like a piercing, like an eyebrow piercing, but through the skin on his back. And he wasn't even bothered. No blood. He just turned around and walked away, looking back at me every 5-10 steps. And that arrow probably had 7 or 8 inches of skin over it, and then the fletching out one end and the broadhead out the other side, like a piercing. And it just went through his skin, and he walked away. And I'm distraught. I am beat up. I call Scott on my cell phone, and I'm telling him, and he's like, oh, man. Just as I'm doing that, a buck comes from the other way at 200 yards out. Scott, I got to go. So I hang up the phone. This one's bigger. Right on. So I throw some grunts, hit him with the snort wheeze. That turns, and he comes the exact same path. I don't even got to range it. I know. And now
I know
that branch is there. So he stops the exact same spot that other buck stopped, staring right at me. And I thought, take two more steps, buddy. Take two more steps. I'm full draw. He takes the two steps. I let that arrow fly. I hear the thunk. And as he turns, I see my arrow sticking out of him. And then it falls on the ground. And he runs probably 75 yards and stops. And he stood there for 5 minutes at, I don't know, maybe 80 to 100 yards. And stood there, staring back at me. And I'm thinking, fall. Fall.
Just drop.
Fall. Fall over. Nothing. And then he walks away. So I call Scott. Okay, we're on our way. Sit tight. Don't move till we get there. So him and his uncle come. We get down, find my arrow. Well, what had happened is where that arrow fell out, and here's where I got disheartened. Instead of my broadhead being attached and like the arrow breaking off, that he hit a tree when he was running away, and it bent. That broadhead was still in his shoulder because it tore the collar on the arrow and the threads to pop that broadhead off the arrow shaft.
Oh, no.
So I know there was a
bunch. Are you shooting mechanicals or are you shooting
fixed? I am. I'm shooting rage. And up till now, I've never had a problem with rage. And all the blood trails, insanity. Like the 2-inch blades. But so, oh my gosh. Okay, but we got blood. And we got a good amount of blood. So we follow this blood all the way up. And we're a good hour and a half following it this one way. And then it stops. Like, what's going on? Well, on our way out, Scotty says, well, I'm just going to walk over here. We figured, okay, we know that that broadhead was in the shoulder. We know that the arrow, there's no blood on the shaft. So it's only broadhead. So what do you do? Well, on his way
out. One and out, back out, right?
Yeah. So he walks the other way. And I mean, I had to wait a long time for him and Chuck to get there. So I was probably waiting a good 2 hours on the edge of my seat. But so Scott says, I'm going to walk wide. Well, Scott walks really wide. I got blood way down here. Well, what do you mean you got blood? And I mean, he's a good 200 yards closer to the field. What do you mean you got blood down there? So we go down and look. Well, sure enough. And I'm thinking, well, is that blood from the first one that had that? But it can't be because this blood comes from up that way. So it looks like he went up and doubled back and came. So then the trail was on. Well, we had blood. Drops of blood across this cut cornfield every 5 feet all the way into the woods. And we followed. I mean, we were hours. We were 3-4 hours until we hit a swamp. And then I got a little bit of lung butter. And I thought, holy crap. Like, we had to penetrate. I had to penetrate the lung to get that.
Sure. Yeah.
But we got into the swamp. And, I mean, we were 4 hours in, I think, by the time we called it. Never did find it.
See, and that, just so everybody who's listening, this breaks our hearts as hunters, you know, because our goal is first and foremost to respect to the animals that we chase and hunt. Clean, ethical kills, provide for our families, come home safe and sound at the end of the hunt. I mean, those are our top priorities, right? And the rest is...
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And fully due respect. And I always want to take the perfect shot, which I thought I had. And for whatever, I don't know, I was worried about the branch and I pulled it. He took an extra step with me staring at the branch. I didn't notice. I don't know. Or backed away. I have no idea how. And I mean, I practice with my bow. I do everything right. Should be able to zero that in there. And And it does.
No, that's it.
It bugs you, right? Like it. I figure I've been watching Facebook, trying to wait for somebody to say I shot this buck with a piercing.
Yeah,
I know that buck's going to live forever. I mean, he was
sure. You
know,
I mean, there's stuff.
He's a punk rocker now.
Yeah,
but yeah, no. So it happens, and I think the whole purpose of this podcast was to say, you know what, it happens. It. New hunters, if this happens to you, don't get distraught because it happens to every. I mean, that was 20 years into hunting that those two deer just.
Well, the story I told, that's 20 years plus old, and I can honest to goodness still to this day picture the tree I was sitting in, where that buck came from, where I shot. I don't know what I did to miss, whether he dropped a little bit or whatever, you know. In a newer bow hunter, but the whole experience to this day, I can relive it as if I was sitting in that tree So it sticks with you.
Oh, yeah.
Even though we've shot deer, we've had good experiences that have topped that for sure. But the successes and the failures make up what is our hunting DNA.
Yep. Yep. I hunted that stand tonight. And we have a stand there now, not a climber. So, and I hunted it tonight, and I was reliving.
Why are we having a podcast as opposed to you cleaning deer?
Yeah, right. Because I still haven't seen a deer since that week of black powder. My gosh, they've just disappeared. I was honestly going to take a walk. I'm thinking somebody's had to hang some oiled soaked coveralls in a tree around here somewhere. Something's going on.
Not good.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. All right.
Well, that's a couple not so good stories, but it humbles you when you can tell a story like that, and keeps you fresh to go out in the bush and want to do better the next time, right?
You got it. It's like golfing, and you just start to get better at the end of the last round, so you want to play another round. Keeps that's you coming right. back. Yeah, no, but yeah, so that's our failure stories, folks, and we hope you enjoyed them as much as we're sitting here crying now. I've got to go.
Yeah,
feel it all.
There's more, but we'll end it on that. There's a lot more.
They may come out as we talk. I don't want to dwell on them anymore. I can't take it anymore.
I'm getting depressed. But thanks, everybody, for listening to the story. And I hope you guys have a few that you can share and have a few laughs from what we did wrong. And there's going to be a few that we did right. And hopefully we can share those to you in upcoming podcasts.
Yep, for sure. For sure. It's been great. Awesome. Thanks, Bill. Thanks everybody, Dad, for listening.
Till next week. Okay, that'll do it for today. So until next time, on behalf of Redneck Country Podcast, I'm Bill Tom.
I'm Todd Millard. And Scott Goodall.
Nope, I'm good.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you want to be part of the podcast, by all means, hit us up at podcast@theredneckcountry.com. Again, that's podcast@theredneckcountry.com. And be part of it. Join us and have a blast. I hope you enjoyed it. Sitting around the campfire having some fun.